good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, or if you download the Civic Media app, which is free, you can call and text directly from the app, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Going to be switching gears a little bit and lighten things up for the second
hour. A little bit.
The show, just a little bit. This sounds like really good news to me. There's a new bill, new state bill in Wisconsin that has bipartisan support.
Whoa.
Which would create income and franchise tax credits for film production companies and also start up a state film office that would be attached to the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. Wisconsin is only like one of five states that doesn't have a dedicated film office.
And it's not for a lack of trying either.
We have, joining us is our colleague and host of the Nightlight program across the Civic Media Radio Network, Monday through Friday, from 7 to 9 p.m., Pete Schwabe. Good morning, Pete. Thanks for joining us so last minute.
Morning,
we reached
Jane.
Out to you real quickly this morning. It was like, hey, you want to talk about this?
I always want to talk about this. I think it's important. And yeah, happy to be here. Good to be with all of you.
I mean, it is kind of shocking to me that Wisconsin is one of five states that does not have a film office. Do we know why this has never happened?
Well, like Greg said, it's not for lack of trying. I know I'm a little unclear. I didn't live here when they made the first go round at this in the early 2000s, but I know it didn't last long. And I think the film office has been under the tent of Travel Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, or the Wisconsin Tourism Office. We're only one of 10 states that don't offer any incentives whatsoever to filmmakers. So having shot something here in the early 2000s, we got a lot of favors, which is kind of like incentives, but you're not going to draw any major film traffic here without some type of bona fide incentive. Or TV shows for that matter either, because it's just too competitive right now. I even have a film I was going to shoot in Minnesota, were it not for the strike. They offer multiple incentives in Minnesota. So yeah, it's we're a little behind in that category at least.
You know, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you, Pete, if people don't know this, you are comedian, writer, filmmaker, you've got,
you were in the biz. You were in the industry.
Biz. Yeah. And I was going to say, if this comes to light, if this happens, if this goes through finally, how apt are you going to be towards making more content, films, whatever, in Wisconsin, Wisconsin-centric, and using the beautiful landscape that is this state?
Well, that's really well said. I mean, you can shoot anything in Wisconsin. We have urban settings, rural settings, lakes. We don't really have huge mountains, but we have beautiful forests and woods, and you can really shoot anything here. And I know two or three people offhand that are trying to make their films and are looking at other states.
Yeah.
Well, if we can shoot in Wisconsin, we're closer to home where we have more connections, and the project is likely to see the benefits of that, whether it's, in terms of caterers or crew members or whatever. But also, it's more likely to happen too, Greg, because you don't have to travel. Like, I was going to shoot something in northern Minnesota. Well, I live 8 hours away from there.
Right.
Yeah.
So just to go and scout locations there is an 8-hour drive one way. And, and the other thing is these states have active film offices. Like, they're bending over backwards to help filmmakers. So I think, in addition to that, shooting here in Wisconsin, I don't know if people realize, like you just said, all the topographical advantages and stuff like that, it really does help promote the state as well, the beauty and tourism. And it's invaluable in my opinion.
Wisconsin, Pete, did start a film tax incentive program in 2008, but it was discontinued in 2013. Andrew in Maine had a comment, a question on the live stream. So what kinds of incentives are we talking about? And what have you seen in other states, Pete?
Okay, well, for example, there's a project I have right now. When I started it, we were looking at the UP. I want to say Wisconsin had a 30% rebate at the time. That's cash back. Like, that gets the attention of filmmakers, not only, but the investors are trying to corral for money. That's a positive thing that people see an immediate return. Minnesota has, and don't quote me exactly, but like I think they have a 30% statewide initiative, like rebate. And then if you go up into the Iron Range in northern Minnesota, it's another 25% because they're trying to generate their economy up there.
Sure,
too.
Sure.
So you're not going to get 55%, but the two combined, you could probably get between 35 to 40%. You get a rebate on anything you use in Minnesota or in Michigan, for example. The Michigan law no longer exists, but you get a rebate on any, like, let's say you hire extras, casting from Minnesota, use their equipment for carpentry, electrical, whatever. That's, you qualify for a rebate with that. Now you bring an actor in from, you know, LA or New York or Chicago or whatever, you can't write that off. So you're not going to get the full 55%. Or if you rent camera equipment from LA, if you can't find what you need in Minnesota. So anything you use in that state, you qualify to get money back for. So that's really, I mean, that's huge, you know.
It really is. Wisconsin's bill, and this is from an article from WPR, Wisconsin's bill creates a 25% tax credit for salaries and wages for employees for film production services. It also offers a 25% tax credit for production costs. Those credits are capped at $5 million each year.
I mean, we went to Georgia, Atlanta. That state has been transformed by the film industry a lot. Marvel shoots, if they're shooting in the United States, unless they need like real physical locations, they're shooting in Atlanta. And Tyler Perry has his entire studio down there. There's major networks down there.
So they've been courting this money for a long time.
Oh, a long time. And Pinewood Studios, one of the most famous film studios in England, has a subsidiary in America, in Georgia, where they shoot. And I remember when they shot Public Enemies with Johnny Depp, and I think it was Christian Bale, if I'm not mistaken. Don't at me, tell someone else. That was sort of the excitement because they were shooting on the streets of Milwaukee. And people were like, oh my gosh, are we going to start having movies here? Yeah. And then that bill didn't go through. And we're like, it was so disappointing because it just felt like this is simple. This isn't hard to do. You really speak highly of the state if you want people to come in and film our beautiful landscape.
Well, and look at, I mean, for a comparison, the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity says Illinois brought in a record-breaking $691 million in film production revenue in 2022. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Well, and look, and like you said with Atlanta, Greg, look at what that's done for Chicago. They shoot all the Chicago shows there.
Yep.
And those are TV shows. So that's steady work for all these people. And I personally think Wisconsin would do really well because you have Atlanta, Louisiana. I know, I don't know what it's like there now, but it seemed like for a while, every Netflix that came out looked like and smelled, had that kind of bayou smell to the movie.
I can smell the gumbo Nicolas on this.
Exactly. And Nicolas Cage was in it. And I'm like, this is getting old. I feel like I've seen this movie a gazillion times. Well, you know, Atlanta, Louisiana, California, New York, Chicago, Wisconsin's different. You know, you go up in northern Wisconsin at Bayfield and there's great. I mean, just since I've been doing Nightlight, I've had a lot of murder mystery writers on the show that live up there.
Yeah.
You know, you could shoot up there. There's great locations throughout the state. So I think there's room for another state like Wisconsin to take some of that business.
We're talking about a measure that would create some incentives for filmmakers to come to Wisconsin and shoot their movies and shoot their TV series. IMDb says in Wisconsin, around 2,500 films, short films, and TV episodes have been shot here, compared to over 16,000 in Georgia and over 26,000 in Illinois. So again, this seems to be like a lot of money that we're leaving on the table and letting other states grab it.
We get a text from the 608 listening to WRCE. I worked for the Division of Tourism in the early mid 1980s. There was a film department of sorts, but the annual budget for tourism was only $500,000. Ridiculous.
Oh man. Well, and Wisconsin still does not fare well. We're still dead last in the nation for spending on arts.
Yeah.
the National Assembly of State.
You know why I think that is?
What? Why?
I think it's because weed is not legal here.
Wait, you think the film is...
I was making a joke.
Oh, you said it was so much authority, Pete.
That's what I bring to the table.
Pete Schwabba thinks that.
Never seen before.
Wisconsin spends about 18 cents per capita on arts funding. Oh, man, compared to... to $9.67 in Minnesota and $5.11 in Illinois.
I'm not laughing at the numbers. I'm laughing. You're like, oh, man.
Well, it's just Minnesota envy now. It's,
I know. Right? I get it. I absolutely get it. And, you know, even Steve from St. Louis said a friend of mine, producer, moved from Chicago to Atlanta because of the production opportunities.
I'm sure. Well, and especially in that industry, you have to go where the work is, right, Pete?
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, you can, like, there are a lot of filmmakers in Wisconsin. I was actually surprised that number was that high because there are very loyal people here that have refused to leave the state and are willing to gut it out and make their films under the current conditions anyway.
Yeah.
So they live here. There is a community here, and it's a very talented one. I think this would be great all around, and I hope it goes through.
Me too.
If
absolutely.
Anybody needs a long-haired, bearded man who's got a slight weight problem to play a lumberjack of any sort, I'm happy to come to you. I'll be paid in sandwiches.
Pete, can
you just killed your negotiating ability there, Greg.
I'm not the union guy. I take what I can get, buddy.
We'll work for sandwiches. Pete, can you stay with us for another segment? We're going to do a little movie review, and Calvin is going to check in, too, on a movie they debuted over the weekend, if you got time.
Absolutely.
Stay with us. Pete Schwabba will still be here when we return. You're listening to Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome to Matt Nair on air. So dramatic. Matt Nair
very
on
dramatic.
Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, talking about a new bill in Wisconsin that actually has bipartisan support. Seriously. Would create income and franchise tax credits for film production companies. And it would start up a state film office. We are joined by our friend and colleague, Pete Schwabba, who is your host of Nightlight across the network from 7 to 9 p.m. on Mondays through Fridays. Pete, we have Sharky on the line. He had some experience working in the movie industry. Good morning, Sharky. Thank you for your patience.
Good morning. I'm loving the call here. This is great. I know a guy. Actually, I know a gal. She's a cousin of mine, Christy Lip Martinsek. And she was the one that brought the ABC films to Milwaukee, the Mark Harmon, Sherilyn Finn film, like I said, out of Milwaukee, based here. And I got lucky enough to be part of that. And they actually hired me for a location assistant. And that was about 9 months. That was enjoyable. Milwaukee was ecstatic at the time. Mark Harmon, I love him. I think he did a better job at Dillinger than... the other guy that runs Public Enemy number one, but that was a film, good film too. But what my point is here is that she's still probably in it, and I'm not sure. She had been hired by the city of Milwaukee as a civic development, and that's when things were rolling. And fine lady, a great gal. Her husband's also very involved in Hollywood, to my knowledge, out on the West Coast. But these are the things that we did. And, we've done the Bonaducci film here, too. And that was really, really low buck. But it was fun, too. We got to knock around a lot of guns and a lot of fights and a lot of gunshots. And just,
and then they made a movie, too.
A good day at the office. Thank you so much, Sharky. Always appreciate you joining us. And thank you so very much for listening. Pete, I'm curious because, again, you did live and work in Los Angeles for many, many years. Is there an appreciation for Wisconsinites' work ethic in the industry?
Yeah. I think it's kind of considered the Midwest work ethic, but yeah. Within that, there is definitely the Wisconsin work ethic. And it's funny, what helped my transition to LA when I moved there, I spent time in both Chicago and Wisconsin. There are networks out there of those communities. And when you're out there, it's kind of like you're all just Midwesterners and transplants and, you bond very quickly. And certainly there are like Packer bars you can go to.
Right.
Wisconsin used to have a film event out there every year. And I went to one and Cato Kaelin was there.
From
Wisconsin. Oh my God.
That
great,
is a blast.
Great reference, Pete. Great reference.
They weren't like promoting him or anything, but he just showed up.
That's what he does. He shows up and he stays in your house.
And he witnessed nothing, in my opinion, that day. I'm not trying to start anything. He was there. So it was interesting. But yeah, there's a great community out there at Wisconsinites.
It's interesting. Friends of mine who've gone to LA, they've told me that people who have, most of them go there having to get a quote unquote real job. And they said that, most of us get promoted within 6 months. Because we're
hard workers.
We're showing up on time. We're doing the work.
We're not surfing.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. There's definitely that. They definitely have that reputation out there. Although now, I don't know if that exists anywhere. I think everybody's having trouble finding workers.
We are talking
absolutely.
We're talking with our colleague Pete Schwabe about this new measure that would set up a film office here in Wisconsin. We're one of only 5 states that does not have one and is really not chasing after that Hollywood money, which I think we should do. And
give Vancouver a run for their money.
Yeah, seriously. One thing we want to do before we let you go, Pete, and I want Calvin to chime in on this, and I bring this up because a woman that I ran into this week that I was not expecting was all excited about the new Dune movie. She's like, I can't wait to go. I can't wait to see it in the theater. I'm so excited. And she's in her 50s, and I'm like, really?
Dune 2, Electric Boogaloo.
That's what calls to you. So, Calvin, you saw it over the weekend. What did you think of the newest Dune?
So, I'll preface this with, I've read the books, so I knew what was going to happen.
Okay.
I really liked it. Visually, it's spectacular. The sound is great. The pacing is really good.
I feel a butt.
Yeah, I think the third act, this is me putting my film critic hat on, I think the third act lacked some tension, and I don't know how well I was able to connect with the relationship. So I think those two aspects fell a little flat, but overall it was a really good
one. Out of
5 stars.
Out of how many Calvins do you give it? 1 out of 5 Calvins, how many Calvins do you give it?
More than 4, but less than 5.
All right.
4.3.
4.3 Calvins.
4.3 Calvins, right. for the newest Dune. Pete, have you seen it yet?
I have. I went last night. I had not seen the first one, the one that was from a couple of years ago. It's not my type of movie, right out of the gate, but I did spend about 6 hours watching Dune this weekend.
Oh, okay.
One and two. And I wouldn't disagree with Calvin there. I thought, for me, it's like, cinematically, it's gorgeous, mm-hmm. and the music is amazing. It's well directed, and I think he said it was well paced, and I agree with that. The narrative, the third act felt a little bit like a celebration rather than an actual. There was no tension. My son said this too, and I agreed. Like the character, he wanted him to be a little more conflicted. He just kind of accepted this mantle. And for those of you who haven't seen it, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But it's sort of. I agree with that. It was a little bit of, the ending was a little anticlimactic, but it's a really good watch. Better than Dune 1. Dune 1, I was kind of lost. I was like, what is going on here?
And
And my son Joe said they're just kind of setting the table for Dune 2, and I think that's accurate as well.
But it's interesting that you say that, because I read the books too, and granted, I read these books a long time ago, but I tried to watch this first newest Dune, and I was so confused in the first in the first 20 minutes. And again, I read the books.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I think I'm still traumatized, Pete, from the first Dune that came out.
The masterpiece of David Lynch?
Yes, the David Lynch one where Sting was flying around in his underwear. I still have never gotten that past that.
Dune is one of those.
I could see a young Jane Matinera being enthralled by Sting in his underpants.
Was something.
But I agree, though. The first Dune, when I watched it this weekend, there was like a minute of narration, and I'm like, I'm already lost. Like,
right.
Everything sounds the same, the Harkonnens, the Irakonnens, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, what?
You just lost me.
Well, I just saved you a lot of time, Greg, is what I did.
Thank you very much, Pete.
It's a good one. If you go see Dune 2, even if you didn't see the first one,
you'll still enjoy it.
There cinematically, where you're going to be like, whoa, this is pretty cool, if you just don't dissect it too much.
All right. Pete Chwaba, thank you so very, very much for joining us. And make sure you catch Pete and his wonderful show, Nightlight, across the network Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 p.m. Thanks a lot, Pete. Take care. News is next. Stay here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. The packing is underway at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and joining us, she is MPM's Collections Move Project Manager and Registrar. Sarah Padeko is joining us on the line. Good morning, Sarah. Did I pronounce your last name correctly, I hope?
You did. Yeah, you did a great job.
Oh, good. Thank you. I said it really quickly in case I destroyed it and then you wouldn't notice. So you must be one busy human being.
Yeah, you know, there is a lot going on right now, but it's a really exciting time to be working at the museum. So that kind of offsets all the work that's going into it.
All the mania. When you are talking about a building and an institution as large and as old as the Milwaukee Public Museum, where do you even start with your schematic on what do we pack first?
So that's something that we've really had to work at, because if you think about 4 million things in conglomerate, that can be really, really overwhelming. And so what we've started to do is we've started to look at each individual collection on its own and really assess it for its individual merits. Where is it going? Is it going on-site or off-site? Is it going on exhibit right away? Is it not going to be going on exhibit right away? Is it currently on exhibit now? Things like that. And then we also think about what a collection is made up of. Is it taxidermy? Is it glass and ceramics? Is it our ethanol collections? Things like that. And that kind of helps direct us as to when we start the packing process on each part of the collection and how we go about packing that material.
Well, that makes sense. I suppose for things that are not necessarily going to be going on display anytime soon, you pack that up so you can put that in the back of the back of the trailer, right? And then so things are going to be more accessible as you need them, as you pull them out.
Yes, exactly. So the first things that we are focusing on are things that will be moving into storage, things from our current storage into existing storage, or into the new storage. So yeah, exactly. And then that will free us up later down the line for things that we know are going to be actively exhibited.
So the first round of packing, and this is according to the Milwaukee Public Museum website, consists of 23,000 glass and ceramic items from the history collections. So you're talking everything from vases and creamers and teacups and serving dishes and figurines. Good heavens. And everything's got to be bubble wrapped, right?
Yeah, it does. Well, the museum version of a bubble wrap. We have, go figure, we have special bubble wrap. But yeah, so there's lots of different types of glass and ceramics that we're packing right now. Like you said, everything from these teacups and saucers and platters all the way to these little really delicate figurines that are made out of ceramic. We have some Italian glass that we're packing that's also very, very delicate. So there is a lot of range in this collection. And so because of that, it's been a unique process. We've had to figure out how to standardize the packing process for this collection the best way that we can, right? So that
sure.
It doesn't take, you know, hours and hours per object. But at the same time, make sure that we really protect each object based on its individual merits and where its sensitivities are. So that's been something that's been a challenge to develop, but I think we've finally gotten there. And we're using all archivally safe materials. They're inert, they're dye-free. So that means they're going to be nice and safe for our objects.
And that's really important as far as preserving these objects and make sure, as you said, that nothing gets not beyond just broken, but compromised in some other way in the storage process. Because I would imagine some of that stuff's going to be put away for a while.
Yeah, so it will be going into our collections. And so while it might not be on display, something that we really pride ourselves on is that we have frequent researchers that utilize our collections.
Right.
So even though something might not be on display, we still often do have people accessing it, publishing about it, you know, writing books about them, things like that. So, yeah, but they will be, these are slated to be in storage for this first part, sure.
Sarah Padeko is our guest. She is the Milwaukee Public Museum's Collections Move Project Manager and Registrar, and just talking about the enormous undertaking to get all of these 4 million items packed up and cataloged, and so you know where everything is. And I remember, Sarah, I was there a couple of years ago talking to your executive director, and she actually took me down in the basement when we were talking about all the water problems that the building has had over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were in the fossil room. There must be a million fossils just of fossils. I mean, there's drawer
after... Well put.
Right? That's so eloquent. But there's drawer after drawer after... I have never seen that much stuff before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So our geology collections, especially the fossil collections, you can talk about, people think about geology and they think big dinosaur bones and dinosaur skeletons, but really a lot of geology too is very, very, very small little particles and pieces of the earth. And so that is going to be very one of our very numerous collections that we're going to have to track and locate. And so I guess something to talk about is that the way we track something like the geology collection is going to be a little bit different than the way that we might track the history collections, because we have so many very fine little things.
Mm-hmm.
So often in our geology collections, we will track by little, these fossils are stored in little boxes. And so we'll probably track by the box and barcode that box versus tracking each individual little fossil.
Oh,
yes, exactly.
You'd be there for several years just dealing with all the fossils. If you
These
had to...
fossils have so many fossils!
If you haven't been to the museum and you haven't been able to have access to some of the things that I've been able to see over the years as I was doing different stories and stuff, think about that. 4 million objects.
Yeah.
4 million objects. And according to your website, Sarah, in 2019, they started to fill in the gaps with digital records. Since then, they've transcribed and imported over 144,000 handwritten records into the system so you can keep track of this stuff. That's just astonishing.
And if I could give a shout out here to our team of transcriptionists guests. This was a few years ago, but we had five individuals who sat day in and day out and looked at some really old catalog records with that old kind of spidery handwriting.
Scripts, yeah.
And every day they would transcribe hundreds of records into our digital catalog. And so we owe most of this move, quite frankly, to them.
That makes my hands hurt thinking about that. But Sarah, so your title is Milwaukee Public Museum Collections Move Project Manager. This is sort of a two-pronged question. One, when did that job start for you? Like, they made the announcement. When did they put you on the case? Say, all right, this is your thing. Take it. Take all 4 million plus items. Treat them with care. The fossils have a lot of fossils, so be careful. But so when did that start? And then the other question is, what is, from the macro to the micro, what is your day or your week? Okay, this today we're working on this, tomorrow this, or is it the entire month of March we're going to be working on this project? I mean, kind of walk, can you walk us through what your daily, weekly, monthly is like until opening, if you can make that bold prediction?
Definitely. I can do my best. So I began at the museum just as the registrar back in 2013. So I have been here about 11 years or so.
Okay.
And in that time, as a registrar, I dealt with all of the curatorial departments and all of their collections. I helped with things coming in and coming out. And so because of that, I kind of developed a very good knowledge of our collections and our collections base and what they need. And I also overview the preventive conservation here, so how they should be stored and how they should be transported. So I moved into the collections and move project manager role maybe about a year ago or so, maybe a year, year and a half ago. However, the work had already been going on for a few years before that, and I had just sort of been helping to inform that work. And then eventually we just decided that this would be a logical next step for the duties that I was already doing.
Sure.
So that's how I became the project manager. And my day to day is, oh gosh, I wish I could give you a good, it's funny because I'm never doing the same thing 2 days in a row. So often what'll happen is I will ping from collection to collection, which is okay. You have to get your mind around it. So sometimes I'll be working with our bird collection, our taxonomic bird collection. And then, you know, within the next 10 minutes, I have to go and I have to work with the, you know, the glass and ceramic collections. And so from one side, we're looking at very granular. How are we going to inventory? How are we going to pack? But then I'll go to a meeting about, you know, the overall process for moving. And, you know, when are we, you know, we're looking at time spans from years versus
sure.
time spans of a day.
Right.
And so it's a lot of malleability, right? It's something I know that it was something to get used to when I first started this job. There's a lot of moving back and forth and sort of pinging from very disparate topics.
You have to be pretty flexible.
Yeah.
You got to be pretty flexible, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Because you just never know. And that's another thing. You almost never know what you're going to be doing on the day to day. But because of that, I work with a really phenomenal team of museum professionals who are really helping to make even the beginning, the first part of this process, go very smoothly.
The Milwaukee Public Museum opened, it was chartered in 1882. It opened to the public in 1884. They are going to be moving from their current location on Wells Street to a newly constructed building that's due to open by early 2027. It's going to be on the corner of 6th and McKinley, adjacent to the city's Deer District. This is really exciting, Sarah. And I do think, I mean, we do get a half a million visitors at the museum, and they're not all from Milwaukee. They're from all over the state and all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the researchers, too. It was my understanding that one of the plans for the new facility is to allow people to look in on people as they are doing research with some of these items, which would be, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. I believe there will be a space where you can sort of look into the collections themselves and sort of see what that looks like. So, yeah, this new museum is really allowing us a lot of opportunities to do some really very neat new programming and outreach to the public.
The new building will be approximately 200,000 square feet, five stories, and an additional 50,000 square foot collections storage building. You can always donate as well. You're still fundraising, I have no doubt. Right, Sarah?
Always.
Always.
No, we're good.
No,
we're good.
We don't need any more money. It's fine. Go to the Milwaukee Public Museum website, mpm.edu, and you can find many links there. And I know you guys do a lot of stuff with volunteers, too. Nothing gets done without volunteers.
Well, exactly. And that's something, too, that we're starting to ramp up with the move process. We're looking at maybe where we can have some volunteer work, helping to, you know, prep supplies and things like that. So this museum definitely is very much helped by our volunteer
well,
space.
Well, you can find out about volunteering. You can find out about tickets. You can find out about how to help donate and make sure that this project gets completed at mpm.edu. She is the Collections Move Project Manager and Registrar. Sarah Padeko has been our guest. Thank you so very, very much, Sarah. It's been so interesting. And have a good couple years packing stuff.
Watch out for them fossils.
Watch out for the fossils. Fossiling.
I'll watch out for those fossils. Thank you so much for
Thank you, Sarah.
Me.
Thank you, Sarah. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on air. Thank you so very, very much for joining us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It was a very busy show today.
Yeah, it was great. Wonderful conversations.
Went really, really quickly. So thank you all so very much for joining us. Want to remind you to download the Civic Media app. You can listen to all of the stations all across the state. And you can call and text directly from the app, which is absolutely free.
I just don't understand why it's free, Jane.
It's such a deal.
It's a deal.
It's such a deal. Todd Alba's show from noon to 2 p.m. will be coming up right after the news, followed by Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4 p.m. We're going to have Maggie on in the next couple of weeks. Yeah. I caught part of her show on Friday, and she was talking about a new blueprint for America that some right-wing think tanks have put together, and it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
It's along the lines of Project 2025, which we have touched on a little bit with Joe Zepecki. And we're hoping to have him back on so we can delve a little bit further into that. Some of these plans would essentially remake the entire government.
Yeah, especially
it would end up in a form that is not recognizable.
Especially if a president was granted total immunity.
Total and complete immunity.
Yeah.
Before we head out of here, State Senator Andre Jacques announcing today he is going to run for Congress. He wants to run for Representative Mike Gallagher's seat. Now that Gallagher has announced that he is bowing out of politics, the DePere Republican, Andre Jacques, says he wants to deliver wins for the conservative cause in running for higher office. Jacques says no one is going to outwork me.
I've seen some of the faces that might run against you. Yeah, they will.
Well, this is setting up a primary now. Yeah. in that district.
I think it's three people actually in that. It's Jacques, Trump associate, and then one more.
The guy who's living in Florida right now. Yeah, the guy who's living in Florida.
Okay.
He's living in Miami Beach.
Guys, I'm just, you know what I'm going to do this? I'm making an announcement today. Big news, Jane Mattinair Show on Civic Media. You thought the new Tammy Baldwin ad last week was big that we played, and we should play it again. I'm running for Congress in Arkansas. I don't live there. I've never been there. I can barely spell it. It's very weird. But I'm going to run there. Why? Because the good people of Florida, California, and other places have given me hope that just because I don't live in the community, I can tell that community what I think.
I can still get elected there.
And I should be the representative of the people that I've never met.
At least three Democrats have signaled interest in running for Mike Gallagher's seat. Among them, our friend and colleague, Dr. Kristen Lierley.
Wonderful.
Also considering a run for the 8th Congressional District, Alicia Sanders, Kelly Peterson, and then, of course, again, Dr. Kristen Lierley. We'll see what happens with that. In separate interviews, they all say that while one of them will run for the seat, the others might choose to run for state legislative seats in the district. They also indicate they plan to make their decisions by late this month or early next month. Congressional candidates have to file their paperwork to run in Wisconsin by June 1st in order to get on the ballot for the primary, and that is set for August 13th.
It's going to be, you know, the presidential race is so far not going up to be a very interesting thing. We know who's going to be who and doing what.
And who's
going to
be running.
But these congressional races and this, and you know, I'm Tammy Baldwin. I'm not saying Tammy Baldwin's going to win outright. That's a dumb thing to say. But I feel like even with someone like Eric Hovde, California landowner, guy with mustache, she's going to probably campaign 10 times as hard because that's how much,
but that's who she is.
That's who she is. That's how much she cares about this. And I don't know if you wanted to, but I got the ad again if we wanted to play it again because it was very important.
Well, it showed up in my email box on Friday. It's from a super PAC that we've never heard of. So I guess, Calvin, if you're ready.
What has Senator Tammy Baldwin done to Wisconsin? Let's take a look at her record. Last year, Senator Baldwin helped lower the cost of insulin for Wisconsin seniors. Shocking. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
A $35 cap on out-of-pocket costs for senior citizens on Medicare. And there's more. Tammy Baldwin brought home $200 million to fight for clean drinking water for everyone and is helping build actual bridges in Wisconsin by securing over $3 billion through the bipartisan infrastructure law.
He sounds upset.
Is this what the people of Wisconsin want? A radical socialist, communist, Marxist, liberal, feminist in a caravan? A lawmaker doing actual work on your behalf? We know better. So vote for the California guy running against Senator Tammy Baldwin. She needs to stop getting things done for Wisconsin.
You guys, this is actual good stuff. Did you? Whatever.
Paid for by the We Got Nothing Else Super PAC. Also, Senator Baldwin has no idea who we are and does not endorse this message.
Again, you have to wonder what they're going to bring out against her.
Yeah, I mean,
because she actually has, I don't know, like accomplished things for the people of Wisconsin.
So far, the other guy has mustache.
He has mustache, he has frozen lake, and now he has axes.
Loves throwing axes.
Who knew?
I mean, that's a real Wisconsinite. And you know what, Jane? I'll take it one step further. As a guy,
yeah.
What a man.
Does it just give you chills?
Just makes me want to be more of a man.
Well, nothing says I'm going to be an effective lawmaker like your ability to throw an axe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can see how that adds up perfectly.
He's going to throw an axe at the people who don't do that. Don't throw axes at people.
At the communist, Marxist, liberal people in caravans.
Yeah, he's going to throw axes at Karl Marx.
All right. Thank you so very much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate all the calls and the texts. It means everything. It really does. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Stay right here. News is next, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.